Hi everyone, my name's Timothy Morton. I'm Professor of Literature and the Environment at the University of California at Davis, and this is a talk called Beautiful Soul Syndrome, which I was going to give at UCLA on Wednesday the 20th of May for a seminar called The Cultural Prehistory of Environmentalism. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to present it there directly, so I decided to upload it here, and I'd love your comments if you have any. I'd love to know what you think. The cultural prehistory of environmentalism is designed to sort of contextualize contemporary environmental thinking and politics and culture, and this is my contribution to it, which is basically saying that we're still very much within the Romantic period in terms of how we think about environmental issues. And in order to get beyond this, if we do want to get beyond it, we're going to have to paradoxically sort of go through it rather than go over it or under it, if you see what I mean. Anyway, this talk is called Beautiful Soul Syndrome. Hegel held that philosophy wasn't just about ideas, it was about attitudes towards ideas. These attitudes were kind of as yet unthought ideas, ideas that hadn't been fully realised consciously. If, as Donald Rumsfeld has claimed, there are known unknowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns, there are also, as Zizek adds, unknown knowns, things that we know, but we don't know that we know them. The unconscious, if you're going to be psychoanalytic. So once you realise what your attitude towards an idea is, that attitude itself becomes an idea towards which you have yet another attitude, which you'll need to figure out, and so on, in a dialectical progression that Hegel calls the phenomenology of spirit. Philosophy, therefore, is the history of philosophy, and history is inextricable from philosophy. Thus, it's a pleasure to be talking today about the history of environmentalism, and in particular about an attitude towards certain ideas within environmentalism, an attitude that maintains its grip precisely to the extent that it hasn't been fully thought consciously. This is an attitude I'm calling Beautiful Soul Syndrome, or BS for short. Yes, that is a joke. And it's a pleasure to explicate the history of this idea, which is doubly romantic, as it were, because the name Beautiful Soul was first developed by none other than Hegel himself to describe a certain attitude he found typified in Romanticism. And within the Romanticism itself, they developed the environmentalism within whose ideological framework we are still struggling. First, though, a word about prehistory, as I note that our lecture series is entitled A Cultural Prehistory of Environmentalism. Prehistory seems nicely poised between history and nature, as if it indicated a time before history as such, or as if it was a prior history that is continued in the sequence of events we acknowledge as historical. We know the ideological uses of prehistory to describe primitive or non-Western societies, a usage to which Hegel himself was prone, as when he designated Africa as outside of history, locked in a perpetual prehistoric cycle whose spell could only be broken by an imperial incursion. Prehistory, then, is a rather suspect term, but it also works in a strange way because it suggests, as in my second tentative definition, a history of which we are not yet properly conscious. This prehistorical condition is, I suppose, the condition of most ecological knowledge. We are as yet unaware of the extent to which Darwin, born 200 years ago, had already historicized nature, laying the groundwork for a truly natural history by outlining in broad terms the algorithmic processes according to which this history might proceed. And indeed, this history isn't simply a story we're telling about something that isn't historical in essence, for DNA is a code, and codes are languages. And history is not only events, but also the inscription of events, and so is evolution, because that's how evolution works, through constant rewritings of the DNA sequence. This rewriting proceeds without a teleology, which is why Marx loved it so much that he wrote Darwin a fan letter, and which is why it's truly historical, because every single contingent event counts, and nothing is an analogue, metaphor, or metonymy for anything else. Our lungs evolved from swim bladders in fish. There's nothing lungy about a swim bladder, nothing predictive or teleological about it, nothing superior about a lung, nothing metaphorically suggestive of breathing in the swim bladder, and so on. Like history, the more you find out, the more ambiguous things become. All the way down to the DNA level, things are highly ambiguous. DNA as such lacks an essence. It's made up of all kinds of viral code insertions, so you can't tell which bit is original. The question of originality is meaningless to some extent. DNA, as such, isn't very DNA-ish, and it's a text, so you can reread it and rewrite it. That's what viruses do. They tell your DNA to make copies of themselves, so DNA doesn't contain a little picture of you. In the same way, to study historical events is to study an ever-ramifying, increasingly complicated mesh of interconnected circumstances that don't quite add up to each other. So the more we know about so-called nature, the more unnatural it seems. Do you think a virus is alive? A virus is a macromolecular crystal that contains some RNA code. It doesn't reproduce as such, it only tells your cells to make copies of it. The cold virus is a huge 20-sided crystal. If you think the rhinovirus is alive, then you should probably admit that a computer virus is also alive, to all intents and purposes. A computer virus also tells other pieces of code to make copies of itself. The life-non-life boundary isn't thin, and it isn't rigid. We have a very protein-centric view of life as a squishy, fluid, palpable thing. We're still living with the remnants of that other romantic view, nature philosophy, with its fantasy of protoplasm or Urschleim. Your DNA doesn't stop expressing itself at the ends of your fingers. A beaver's DNA doesn't stop at the ends of its whiskers, but at the ends of its dam. A spider's DNA is expressed in its web. The environment, then, from the perspective of the life sciences, is nothing but the phenotypical expression of DNA code. This includes oxygen, anaerobic bacterial excrement, and it includes iron ore, a byproduct of archaic metabolic processes. You probably drove or flew here today using crushed, liquefied dinosaur bones. You are walking on top of hills and mountains of fossilized animal bits. Most of your house dust is your skin. The environment is beginning to look like a not very successful upgrade of the old-fashioned term nature. What the heck am I doing then as Professor of Literature in the Environment? Well, I suppose that's my job, making things difficult and complicated that appear to be simple and straightforward. In part, this is merely about bringing us up to speed with contemporary life science and with contemporary capitalism, which is now embarking on an inner colonization of life forms and their DNA, and which is now developing the technology to